Hi everyone, my name is Kenny McIntosh and I'm here for the Raw Rundown episode 20. I'm joined here by David J. McCutcheon, but before that piece of shit gets to speak on this podcast, hey! I want to address a few things here. I was not gallivanting last week. I was not sitting sipping champagne in a skybox with Matt Hardy. I was working. I was on stage trying to deal with that mentalist and try and get him to tell stories. And hearing about him being in an African tribe and making sure that King Maxwell was okay, I was doing the grunt work. What was this fucker doing? He was sitting watching Raw and podcasting about it. He had the easy job. So David McCutcheon, fuck your heart surgeries. I'm not paying for them.
That is incredibly, incredibly rude, okay? All right? Here's the thing. You think that we weren't working last week? Poor Sandra had to babysit me all week. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. She was working.
What
were you doing?
Horrible, horrible job that I would wish on no one. And meanwhile, you got to have fun with Matt Hardy. Poor Sandra. Okay.
I love how you deflect all blame away from yourself. You're like, I can't believe you said that about Sandra, even though I didn't say anything about Sandra.
No. You lumped us in together. Okay. She also blamed you of gallivanting. Okay.
Do you know whose fault it is?
You know what? Babysitting me is the hardest thing she's ever done with her life.
Here's whose fault it is. Here's whose fault it is. The fault lies with Robert Duffin. That's what lies. He is the problem here. And when he decides to, you know, stop being in his fucking Stockholm Syndrome situation, come back, then he will blame him then. But anyway.
But don't you dare blame my good friend Robert Duffin. I wish it were him instead of you, Kenny. I'm moving in with Dad.
Anyway, it is the Raw Rundown episode 20. I obviously was not here last week because of the Matt Hardy tour.
Yes.
Which was phenomenal. Thank you so much to everyone who came out to those shows. Thank you to London, the Garage Islington, for being a horrific venue and making more problems than I needed on the first day of the tour.
So I'm guessing you're not taking a Inside the Ropes tour back there, huh?
Well, if I can help it, not a chance. Thank you to the Comedy Store in Manchester for always being the best venue and helping us and making sure the show is just the best thing possible. Thank you to the Classic Grand in Glasgow for giving us 50 seats less than they should have. Meaning that people had to stand and they only told us 5 minutes before the show. And thank you to Cypress Avenue in Cork, who, when we gave them the Vanguard 1 drone video to play, they played the Glasgow one instead of the Cork one. And I nearly shat myself. But apparently, to those people in Cork, they thought we'd done it deliberately so Matt could come out and delete the video.
At least they had good reasoning.
At least they had good reasoning. And thank you to Rebby Sky, Rebby Hardy. She was great on the piano and at the meet and greets. Matt was an absolute pro. I thought that he was in and out of character enough for it to be interesting for everybody. I know there's been a couple of people, cards on the table. A couple of people did say they didn't enjoy it because he was in character. And to that I say, we advertised it as broken Matt Hardy, you dumb motherfuckers.
How dumb do you have to be?
I can't believe he was in character half the time. Honestly, die.
Oh, my goodness. Now, to anyone who has never been to an Inside the Ropes show, there are always so many stories that Kenny comes back and recites to me, right? Like, Kenny and I, we shoot the shit like 20 minutes before we even start recording, right? Mm. And every time I go, so Kenny, you got to tell me the stories. You got to tell me a story, Kenny. You got to tell me what happened. Because I can't come to the Inside the Ropes shows. I'm in America. But you guys, some of you guys, are in the United Kingdom. And you have the ability to go to these shows. Kenny, for their sake, so they don't miss out in the future, please share a wonderful Broken Matt Hardy story from the Inside the Ropes UK tour.
I'm going to refuse to do that. I'm going to give you two.
Two for the price of one, ladies and germs.
I asked Matt about what his favorite Vince McMahon story was. And this is actually going to be, we are editing this right now to have this out on YouTube in the next couple of days. So you'll get to hear him do it far better than I could. But the gist of it is, I asked him his favorite Vince McMahon story. And he tells me about a time in 2002 or something when all the WWF crew were in the UK. and they're coming back to the US on a red-eye flight, and Vince McMahon is on the flight, and he is drunk on red wine, because that's what Vince McMahon drinks.
Oh, boy.
And Vince McMahon had it in his head that he was going to do one thing on that flight. Vince McMahon was going to pin the Olympic gold medalist, Kurt Angle.
Oh, good Lord.
So, for hours upon hours, Vince would fly and try and spear Kurt Angle, and he would be taken down. He would jump out of places, he would be taken down. Vince McMahon was beaten about 17 times on this flight. So eventually, Vince turns to Matt Hardy and he says, "Hardy, I want you to lure Kurt Angle to the back of the plane, and I'll jump out and I'll pin him." And Matt's like, "What?" And he's like, "Yeah, do it." And he's like, "What's in it for me?" And he was like, if you bring him back, I'll give you a pay rise in the live events." And Matt's like, "Okay." So Matt goes to the front, and he goes and gets Kurt Angle. And he's like, "Okay." And he's walking Kurt Angle up the aisle, and he's like, "You know, Kurt, somebody just wants to something to show you back here, blah, blah." And as he's walking up the aisle, he just kind of whispers, "Yeah, Vince is going to jump out at you, so just be warned." So Vince is like crouching behind, you know where like the trolleys are at the back of the plane?
Yeah, yeah.
Vince is crouched behind there like a, you know, quad-ridden ninja trying to attack Kurt Angle. And he jumps in the air, and before he has reached the ground, Kurt Angle has taken him down and submitted him. And Vince said, "Damn it, Hardy, why did you not do it?" And he was like, "I held up my part of the deal. I better still get my pay rise."
Did he end up getting it?
Oh, no. Never. No.
Oh, that's so good.
And the other one, which I thought was really, really good, which is also going to be going up on the YouTube page very soon. I'm not going to tell the whole story because it's actually really, really good.
Of course.
I asked. He talked in Manchester a lot about something that I was interested in. He came out of character for this, and I thought it was really a worthwhile discussion, where he talked about wrestling fans and how they consume wrestling and babyface or heels and fan reaction, how you respond to fan reaction. And he had an example story, and he said that in 2002, when Steve Austin took his ball and went home, the next three live events for Raw were meant to be headlined by Steve Austin. And after the first match, the ring announcer would say on the live microphone, "Ladies and gentlemen, Stone Cold Steve Austin will not be here tonight. You have until the end of the second match to go and get a refund." So the job of the second match is to make sure people don't go to the merch stand to get a refund. So the two guys told to go out and do that were Matt Hardy and Eddie Guerrero.
Oh, boy.
And Matt talks about how Eddie basically reacted to the crowd and really made sure that nobody was thinking about Steve Austin by the end of it. I'll leave it at that because it's a really good story. We are editing it as we speak, so we should have it up in the next week or so. But yeah, Matt was a delight. Also, people always ask us, you know, why do we not put these shows out in DVD? That's not part of the deal with the talent. You know, a lot of the reason these shows are so good is because they are just being honest and being frank and being candid. And if you have the whole thing released, it'll take away from that. It won't be as open. But we do film everything, so we do have everything sort of filmed, and we will put clips out. And we have spoken to at least one person about releasing a full show of one of the shows. So stay tuned on that. But thank you very much to everyone who came. And we are working on some stuff for next year. We will not be doing anything else in 2016.
Well, I mean, there's only like 3 weeks left of 2016.
Yeah, I just can't do it anymore.
How many names are you in discussions with for 2017 and beyond?
At the moment, it's four.
Wow. Four names, you guys.
I have Gilbert. I actually got a tweet yesterday, and I'm not making this up. And I mean this with no disrespect. I had a tweet yesterday from a professional wrestler who tweeted me and just said, "Hey, Kenny, let's do some business." It was Hornswoggle.
Oh, man, Hornswoggle. Let's see. We're going to have like a tour of Hornswoggle, Gilbert, the ghost of Bastion Booger. who I'm sure has great tales from beyond. Who else would there be? Sick Boy, I'm sure would be game. And let's see. We need a fifth name on this tour. Who do you think it could be? I was going to say Jerry Flynn. Jerry Flynn, perfect. Not to be confused with Jerry Lynn, who was really good.
That was when you really should get the F out like that. Lynn and Flynn, they are very different people.
Very different on the end of the spectrum. Jerry Lynn, one of like my five favorite wrestlers of all time. Jerry Flynn, probably one of my five least favorite wrestlers of all time. I feel bad throwing Hornswoggle in that mix, though, because Hornswoggle certainly doesn't deserve that, right? The WLC match, that was pretty good. I enjoyed it.
Mm. And you know, it's funny, a lot of people ask me, why do you bring over this guy or that guy? And it's like, the problem is the way that other people, not us, the way that other people structured the evening with Market was big name, big name, big name, big name. And because they did it that way and didn't build it up, there's guy like, I would love nothing more than to do a tour with Sergeant Slaughter.
But yeah.
Quite honestly, it wouldn't, not enough people would come to it for it to be worthwhile for us to do.
Right.
Which is cutting for me, I'd love to do it, but.
Right. The thing is that it has to be a financial success. That way you can continue to do these.
Mm-hmm. But the thing is, like, there's sometimes where you go, do you know what? Okay, this might not be a huge financial success, but you know, we'll at least still break even, and it's worth doing for the quality of the content. You know, it's in that sense. There's so many guys that I'd love to bring over, but I'm not even sure we would break even on it. And that's to be brutally honest, that's when you get into the territory of just being a mark in the bad way. You know, just being like, I'm gonna run a show with people to say I've done it. You know.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, exactly.
I lost money on Sunny. That's enough. I'm not doing it again.
You learn from mistakes.
In theory, you do.
Yes.
So let's talk about Raw from Austin, Texas this week.
Do we have to?
I actually thought there was a lot of good stuff on this one. I enjoyed it.
Here's the thing, is there's a lot of really good matches on this one. The talking points, I don't know.
Well, I guess we'll get into it. I do just want to say before we begin. I mean, I didn't get a chance to talk about it last week, but I very briefly did for Sondra. But I want to talk about two things very quickly. Number one, Paul Heyman's promo was absolutely tremendous. It was superb.
One of the best ever.
Oh yeah, because he like, you know, cards on the table. He's not really had great material in the last 6 months.
Yeah.
Because Brock's not done anything of a really emotional standard for people to care about. So it's like, you know, you're only as good as the tools you're given, you know? So like,
right.
if it's like an actor, you can be a really good actor, but if the script's rubbish, the story's rubbish, then what can you do? So I think this is the first thing that Heyman's been able to bite his teeth into in quite a while. And, the fact that he was unshaven, you know, like saying to Michael Cole when he asked how Brock is, like, you care, you know, it was all great stuff. And I think what's interesting is what they managed to do, and I did not think they'd be able to do this, so major, major props to WWE. I was terrified going into Survivor Series about Goldberg and Brock Lesnar. More so because you were very skeptical about it. You were just like, I'm not, why do it, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh yeah, he's probably right. They're probably going to kill it. And I feel like for the most part, just from the feedback that I've heard from people who are watching, and for me as well, is people are really digging this feud, and they've managed to, you know, they managed to create a really shocking moment, which has now kind of triggered a story with Brock Lesnar that's really interesting, which has now triggered a moment at the Royal Rumble. You know, they're both in the Rumble match. That's a big thing. So I'm into the story now going forward, and I think that's a testament to them that they've managed to do that. So, like Sondra said last week, it is one of those things where I'm like, even Sondra likes this. And she should hate this with every fiber.
That is a excellent barometer to the success of it. Yeah.
But the other thing is, a lot of people were complaining about the hot potatoing of the title last week with Sasha.
You had a pretty epic Twitter rant about this.
I did. So I'm just going to do it here.
Do it.
I get it. Like, I get if you think, oh well, the title's changing hands too fast. But here's the thing, right? long title reigns are good, but you can't always have long title reigns. All you have is long title reigns, then it's not special anymore. The reason that I think that this story works for Sasha and Charlotte, and I think the end of this episode actually confirmed it, which we'll get into, is there is a story here. There's layers to this story. There's two women who are on an equal peg who are out to prove something. It's been going back since WrestleMania. Charlotte's never been beaten on pay-per-view. Sasha's beat her twice on TV. Ric Flair was kicked to the curb. Ric Flair came back and endorsed Sasha. There's all these different elements to it. And people are going... And I said on Twitter, I was like, if you like the Attitude Era, then you cannot criticize this.
No, absolutely not. The ultimate hot potatoing of titles in the Attitude Era.
Yeah, and then there were, and then like I looked back, so I was like, I'm gonna get the exact timing, and between WrestleMania 2000 in April, Backlash in April to June with King of the Ring, The Rock and Triple H traded the title 3 times.
Yeah,
just The Rock and Triple H. In 1999, Mankind and The Rock traded the title 3 times within 3 months. This has happened before, and people were like, oh, but that's different because they were big stars. Well, how the fuck are you going to make these women big stars? By fucking featuring them. So
Furthermore, here's the thing, though, is these ladies have been in the main event of Raw and pay-per-views. How are they not big stars? Okay, so they're not big stars by Attitude Era means? Then who the fuck is a big star on Monday Night Raw? It sure as hell isn't Kevin Owens. Because Charlotte and Sasha are bigger stars than Kevin Owens and Roman Reigns and anybody else right now.
Here's the other thing, right? I do think that Sasha Banks is miscast. I do think that overall. Yep. But I still think Sasha Banks is a far better babyface than Seth Rollins is.
Oh, by far and large, sir.
Or Roman Reigns, you know, or fucking Enzo and Cass. But you know, I just think people giving it such a hard time. It's like, I don't know how people are pleased anymore. We want long-term stories. Then you get a long-term story. They've been doing it for too long.
Yeah.
You know, they try and switch things up so it's not as predictable. Oh, but they're hot potato in the title. Nothing is, you know, now nobody's willing to wait and see things play out anymore. You know?
Well, here's the thing. The New Day, that's your long-term title reign, okay? They're about to break the fucking all-time record for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what would happen if every title was held that long? It would be boring. It would be stale. People would be bitching.
And also, to be fair, that's a great example. The New Day aren't exactly setting the world on fire with that long title reign.
No. The current story with it is that they're on a losing streak and that they could lose the titles at any moment. They're having to cheat to retain them as baby faces.
So it's a very... I really feel people should give it a chance. You know, if it's not for you, I mean, who am I to tell you what you like in wrestling or not? But it's the comparisons that bother me the most. It's the... Because it's so stupid. But
people just like to complain. That's the thing. You can give them chicken, you can give them tofu... You could give them steak, and they would go, I don't want any of this. I want broccoli instead. And then you give them broccoli, and they're like, but there's no protein with this. It's like, shut the fuck up and eat.
Exactly. But before we start, just with Raw quickly, Song and I are doing a TLC review, which will be exclusive to Patreon. The way we're going to do it going forward is for all... single branded pay-per-views, me and Sondra or me and David will cover it for Patreon. So if you're one of the $3 and above subscribers, you will get that podcast each month. But for the big four, we will go to the main free channel. So
of course, still get your Rumble. We'll all be involved for those because those are fun.
Exactly. So let's talk about Raw. Seth Rollins comes out. The sign of how he's doing as a babyface for me is when his music hit, I was like, oh, God. And he comes out, says he wants Triple H, suddenly again. He then starts talking about how he dismantled the Shield.
Yeah.
I mean, okay.
Identity crisis.
Yep. And then he basically says that he wants to get to Triple H. He's going to get the belt from Kevin Owens. That's how he's going to do it. And then he can't beat Owens. Well, Jericho's part of the equation. So basically, he's going to take out Jericho to then get to Owens, to then get to Triple H. And then Owens came out, and they start to talk about Jericho's friendship with Owens. Owens has got three gifts for Jericho. The first one is a match with Roman Reigns for the US title. The second is a match with Seth Rollins at Roadblock, End of the Line, which really bothers me when I catch call it Roadblock. And
actually Val was bitching about that too. She's like, Roadblock was shitty enough, but now they have to add a subtitle.
Well, because like Kevin Owens at one point, he's like in a bit of a rant, and he's like, and see it, Roadblock, End of the Line. I'm like, for fuck's sake, just let me say Roadblock.
It takes you completely out of it, yeah.
Language is key, folks. But and then in the end, the other match that Owens had made was for Seth Rollins to have a match right now against the Big Show. Bushy bearded Big Show.
Happy jovial Big Show coming out as a heel present.
But Seth faced Big Show. Big Show was kind of acting like a baby face against Rollins. Owens was on the outside trying to kind of get, you know, egg on Big Show to beat him up. But in the end, Big Show grabbed Kevin Owens, chokeslammed him into the ring, and walked out for a count-out victory for Seth. What did you think of this whole opening schmoz match promo situation?
It was probably the weakest segment that we've had to open a Raw in recent memory. I wasn't huge on it. Kevin Owens was a delight. You know, he usually is. That's the thing. And I know I'm going to get shit for saying that Charlotte is a way bigger star than Kevin Owens. I'm sorry, that's the truth. I still love Kevin Owens. That's not to take anything away from him. It's to talk about how strong Charlotte actually is. So, Kevin Owens, great guy, great player, one of the highlights of Raw. And I'm hoping that these two kiss and make up, and I'm hoping that his presence are received well by Jericho later in the show, Kenny.
As do I, because that's, you know, friendship is key, right? Friendship goals. Yeah,
Kenny, the beautiful thing about friendship is I can yell at you and you can call me a worthless piece of shit, and I yep. may remember it and I may never forgive it, but I still love you.
Thanks. I think. Maybe. Okay. Cool.
You're on my list.
I mean, you are a worthless piece of shit, but you know, that's you're American. You can't help where you grew up.
Yeah, it's true. You know, the thing is, I was grown from the fertilizer that is cow feces. So
we'll be listening to this podcast pre-dinner, folks. This is your appetizer. I thought it was a very strange decision to have the Big Show. Like, the thing is, there is an element which they didn't really talk about, sadly. Like, the Big Show used to be part of the Authority. And yeah. That would have been the angle I would have gone for, you know, like, and have... But then I don't really know what Big Show was supposed to be, because he was like... He tried to work heel for a little bit, then he was clapping everyone's hands. And I also think it's just a shame because, like, the Big Show is actually a pretty decent wrestler for his size, but he's just been so
one of the
badly
best
used.
Big men of all time.
Yeah, 100%. But he's just, I think he deserves one last hurrah, and it doesn't necessarily need to be main event, but I don't know if being the fodder for Seth Rollins is the way to do it, so we'll see what they do. But we did get up next, the first of two cruiserweight matches with Arya Daivari against Jack Gallagher. Jack Gallagher, who has one of my favorite theme tunes in WWE. And he got a little video package beforehand to kind of hype his personality. He won the match in a relatively short space of time. I really liked this match. I thought that Jack did well. He's got a personality. That's good. I like him. I mean, it was short, but you know, I think Jack Gallagher could be one of the kind of bigger names in the cruiserweight division.
He's just so likable, Kenny. Here's the thing is, I am like the world's biggest Jack Gallagher fan. Whenever they were setting up the bracket for the Cruiserweight Classic, he was like one of the three guys I wanted to win it. And there's a lot of guys that I know personally on that bracket. There's a lot of guys I've seen personally for many years on that bracket. And he was like number two on my bracket, because I just, and I've never even seen him in person or anything like that. He's just that likable. I'm so happy that he debuted, because we get to talk about the wonderfulness that is Jack Gallagher. And also, good on Corey Graves for chewing Byron Saxton out for calling him Jack Gallagher.
Yes, Corey Graves is the best. they announced that we would have the tussle in Texas tonight with Titus O'Neil and Mark Henry. Oh, good.
The second I heard about this, I said, you know, there's only few things that can make Kenny's penis so erect that it bursts and explodes like the fat man in Monty Python eating the wafer thin mint. And it would be Titus O'Neil versus Mark Henry, just out of nowhere, for no reason, all willy-nilly.
It's a shame we couldn't get the Golden Truth involved. Just make it a party.
Well, here's the thing. We don't want your testicles to explode as well, just the penis.
Yeah, we want me to be able to procreate at some point in my life. Kevin Owens backstage complained to Mick Foley about what Big Show did to him. He's going to be facing Sami Zayn tonight. Chris Jericho then turned up. Kevin Owens tried to see if they could still be friends. You know, he's like, we're good, right? And Jericho's like, no, we're not.
Oh.
So the tension continues with them. I'm going to try and rope all of this stuff into one, though, because I feel like this next thing is just, we should... Enzo Amore and Big Cass were talking when they overheard Rusev scolding Lana about something.
And, because the big angry foreigner mistreats his wife, yes.
Yes, so Enzo gets involved, which, you know, at least he's doing something babyface-like, which is trying to stand up for a woman who's being shouted at, you know, sure. Fair enough. But then Rusev calls Lana pathetic, she throws her wedding ring at him, and then Enzo ends up trying to, like, chat her up a little bit, you know, and it's actually quite funny. He's like, he says to Cass, I've got this, I'll be home for dinner, Mum. Which was a good line. I did laugh at that.
No. It was. This is a very divisive segment, by the way.
Yeah. So that's why I thought we'll go through it all in one, so we can really get to it, because I know that Sandra has a lot of thoughts on this, just from seeing her on Twitter about it. But so it ends up that, long story short, Lana says that Russo needs to be... Russo does need to be taught a lesson, but Rusev,
yes, he does,
is going to be taught a lesson, and she says that if he comes to room number 705, then they could teach him a lesson together, if you know what I'm saying, David, if you catch my drift. So
I've been a married man for 16 years, Kenny. Sexual innuendo goes over my head.
Basically, she says she's going to fuck him. So they get to the hotel. Cass realizes what's happening, you know, Enzo at some point, he gets a picture of Lana on his phone, tells Cass he's leaving. There's a very funny interaction actually with Ric Flair and Enzo.
Enzo does the world's worst woo, by the way.
And that, and we're including Bret Hart's woo from 1998, where he goes, yes. I think Enzo's is worse as a compliment to Brett. So Enzo basically, you know, he left the building, had a really fun interaction with Flair, which I like stuff like that, you know, have a legend putting over a new guy, you know?
No, I enjoyed this part of it, actually. I thought that this part was funny.
So they do that, and then the hotel segment is basically Enzo's there. She gives him champagne. He's not going to come in the hotel room, but she pretends she's crying. He does come in. She hugs him. She takes his jacket off. She rips his shirt off. She gives him champagne. She eats a strawberry very sexually. She drops something, shows a bit of leg, gets him down to his underwear, and then she says that he's a fool, and Rusev beats the ever-loving piss out of him. And, you know, I think that no matter where you sit on this segment, which we'll get into very momentarily, I love the fact that they are doing these kind of segments again. Barroom brawls, hotel room stuff.
Right.
This is the stuff that separates in-ring promos that you were saying last week. So I'm just going to throw it over to you first, David. What did you think of this whole situation?
This is tricky because I really liked some parts of it and I didn't like other parts of it at all. So I agree with you. Anytime we can get wrestlers away from a ring holding mics shouting at each other, I think that is a plus. I think using backstage vignettes and segments like this are a huge advantage. So I'm happy on that aspect of it. The ruse of seducing Enzo and then beating him up. I also like that segment. I think that that is a good portion of it. It is a good use of the femme fatale trope, regardless of how you sit on that. If you are not a fan of the of tropes of women in entertainment, then you're probably very offended by it. Personally, I'm okay with the femme fatale because I am a man with a penis and I can't empathize with that portion of it. I can try, but even then my empathy only runs so far with that. Now, the thing that I disliked about it greatly was Enzo was very adamantly not into this, right? And Lana was forcing herself upon him and forcing him to do things. That I don't like, because rape is rape, regardless of if it's a woman raping a man or a man raping a woman or a same-sex situation, right? So mm-hmm. That is wrong, and I was reading on Twitter, a lot of people, it conjured up bad memories for a lot of sexual assault victims and things of that nature. It hit a little too close to home for some people like that, and while I'm not in that camp, I can understand their plight, and that's where my empathy lies. I can look at that, and because it felt a little rapey to me, just watching
it. Just out of curiosity, describe just for the listeners what about it felt rapey.
Lana was continually he kept saying this isn't right, and you know I need to leave, and things of that nature. Basically, trying to get out of the situation, Lana was blocking his way and demanding that he remove his pants. And she would physically rip off his clothing. He wouldn't do it. She would. And in that situation, that can hit a little close to home for people, right? And if we may quote friend of the show and frequent guest Jim Cornette, you shouldn't remind people of things that bring up bad memories for them. That's when it no longer is entertainment and it delves more into a personal situation. You're drudging up bad memories unsolicited to these viewers that you're supposed to be entertaining and taking their mind off of the things that are troubling them. That's wrong. That's bad. You should never do that. Jim Cornette used that sentence on speaking about Vince Russo's miscarriage angle that he wrote in the 90s Attitude Era. And Jim Cornette was adamantly against that, and I think the same thing applies here. I think that you can get the same vibe from Enzo willingly walking into the situation and being like, okay, yeah, this is good. And I get why they wrote him like that, so it's not like he's trying to break up their marriage and he realizes it's a mistake and he doesn't want to go through with it. But I think you drudge up more issues in making him the reluctant babyface than you would the marriage desecrating heel in the situation.
Can I give you my thoughts on the subject?
Yes, absolutely. I think I'm about done, so sure.
Okay, and I don't think I'm going to be very popular here, but I think I think I'm able to have this conversation. Obviously, domestic abuse is not okay. Nobody is saying it is. I think this has been blown a little bit out of proportion, to be honest, from my perspective, okay? If somebody feels it's dredged up a bad memory, that's absolutely their entitlement to have that view because it's them, you know, they have that, not me. For me, the thing that's the problem is, like, you know, the whole aspect of Lana trying to get him to do stuff, he is the one who, in all the arena segments, basically made it like he wanted to have sex with her. He ran to get changed to go to her hotel. So all this stuff that happened, I think the problem with it was that the actual, the hotel room bit where it was just Lana and Enzo was quite poorly executed.
Yeah.
Which I think was the issue. It didn't feel rapey to me. I thought that the thing that was actually quite funny about it was that it was clear, I think, to most people, I thought, that Rusev was in on it. Like, I would be surprised if people didn't think that Rusev was in on it. And I thought the attack was really good. The problem is that Enzo and Cass are supposed to be the baby faces, and every segment of every other week leading up to this, Rusev has kind of been the babyface, really.
Right.
But the problem that you've got is that it depends how you view wrestling, right? Because sometimes, like if you watch, tell me a TV show you like, David, any TV show.
Breaking Bad, sure. We'll just
okay.
That's usually a solid example that you can.
If you can watch Breaking Bad, and you thoroughly enjoy it, right?
Sure.
But somebody else could watch Breaking Bad and go, I can't watch this because it reminds me of drug use that I had in the past.
Sure.
So it can bring up a memory. Memories can be brought up from situations that you see on a television show. It depends how you view wrestling. I think we're in an era now where there's a lot of people, and I think some of it is very valid. Some of it I don't agree with, but some of it I do, where we're trying to change the way that wrestling treats people. And I think that, you know, with women, it's come a long way in a good sense. But I don't think that this segment in particular, you know, took us 20 years back. And I know a lot of people are comparing it to, like, this is the worst part of the Attitude Era, and you're seeing it right here. I don't feel that way about it, personally. I just don't. I think it was just a poorly executed segment with Lana and Enzo, but I thought the actual, what for me came out of it, was Rusev actually got to be a bit of a badass and lure the babyface in and beat him up and got to be dominant. So for me, the positive was that. That's what I got out of the situation.
I will say this. I thought that the beatdown was great. It looked really good. It looked really violent. My question to you is, if they would have done what I recommended and just changed the demeanor of Enzo, do you think that this segment would have went on without a hitch? Like, if he would have just been like, shit, yeah, I'm getting laid, instead of like, hey, I don't want you to do this to me, and then she does it anyway? Do you think that everybody would have been perfectly fine with it then?
Maybe. It's a very weird thing, because I've seen this on Twitter, and it's there's this thing on Twitter, like, where there's some people who are like, they'll clock up the amount of female wrestling on an episode of Raw.
Right.
And it feels like it's got to a point where it's like, you know, every week things are being watched to see, you know, it's almost like a police interrogation sometimes, you know?
Right.
It's almost like...
Here's the thing, though, right? If there is a segment of people who would have just gone, well, he's wanting to get laid, so he's just a dirty womanizer. So they probably still would have complained.
Because here's the other thing, right, is... One thing that I think a lot of wrestling fans, and I'm not saying that this is a bad thing, it's just your preference and what you prefer in wrestling. I'm open to all different types of women being on the show, right? And I think that there's a lot of good stuff that's been done with women in wrestling, which is why I'm okay with this segment. But, like, there's some people who just don't want women to be in any way sexualized objects. And that's understandable. Right. But, like there are some things where a situation arises in a segment where a woman behaves in a sexualized way to get what she wants. And right. That's what happened here.
The femme fatale trope, absolutely.
Yes, but I think the conversation should actually be more about the execution, because I think the problem I think you run into, if people are saying, you know, you can't do any segments of this because it might remind someone of a situation that they've been personally involved in, I think once you start going down that route, you're going to close yourself off to 9 out of 10 things. It's like saying, you know, Goldberg shouldn't be able to call Paul Heyman fat because it might remind someone at home that they're fat. You know, like,
well, I think bullying and being raped are like, I think no, that's they, a bit they, of a
no. They are. My point is if it gets to a point, right, where anything that could remind someone at home of something in any way can't happen, because I don't think this segment was rapey, which is why I probably feel the way that I do. You know, if I felt like it was rapey, I would probably be coming at it from a completely different angle. You know, for me, it's like he went to her hotel room because he wanted to have sex with her.
And right, then he got but in whenever, there. And, whenever somebody says no, then that's the cutoff point. Like, if you take a woman home from the bar and she goes, I'm going to blow you and suck your balls through your dick, and then you get back there and she starts crying and says no, but that doesn't give you permission to go ahead with it, though.
Which I never said it did. You know, I'm not saying it does give you the permission to. Let's just clarify that part of it.
Of course.
What I'm saying is, I don't think, I didn't get the impression that he really actually didn't want to do it. I think the execution was so bad, which is my original point about it, is I don't think the execution was very good, which is why there's this gray area that's coming out of it. You know, like the story doesn't really make sense. He goes to the hotel, he goes into the hotel room, then she kind of keeps him in there, like a kind of, you know, Glenn Close situation almost. And then he's saying no, but like he kind of looks like he still wants to. It's a really weird thing, and that was really badly executed. That was the problem part of the segment. But what my point is it's fine if you remember.
Kenny, for that reason.
I completely get it.
Kenny,
I understand.
Kenny, I'm going to interrupt you. Your mic is cutting out a bit, and this is a segment of the conversation where I want you to make sure that you have clarity in your words.
Is this any better?
It sounds like it could be. I think it was more of a connection issue with Skype, though, as opposed to the microphone.
Okay. So yeah, just tell me if it goes away again. But basically, I just feel like it, with wrestling, like, again, I do not in any way condone rape, obviously. You know, and
no one inside the ropes condones rape. Let's go ahead and clarify.
Well, nobody should in any way in the world condone it. But my point is that I think that it's been blown a little bit out of proportion. And the Breaking Bad example is perfect because, you know, the television shows sometimes have a feature in them where something like that can come up. You know, the idea is that in the story, Lana's supposed to be the heel, which is why she's kind of holding him against as well so he can get beat up by Rusev, right? But the problem is twofold. Number one, the execution of the segment was poor, right? In that part of it.
Very poorly written. Inconsistent.
Exactly. But the other problem is, and I think this is actually part of what, it's not been brought up by a lot of people on Twitter, but I think it is part of the problem, is that every week up until now, Lana was pretty much the babyface. Because if you look at all the Roman Reigns stuff, you know, her marriage ceremony was ruined. She's being called all these names. So people kind of had sympathy for her for most of the time, you know?
Right.
But now all of a sudden she's went from being sympathetic figure to rapist, you know, like in 1 week. Like it's a bad way of telling the story, which I think is the problem. But I don't think that if we start getting into things about, you know, I've seen a lot of people on Twitter, and I'm trying to be very careful about this. That's why my words are kind of, that's why I'm not, I sound like I'm kind of going, I just don't want to say anything in a way that's going to be offensive to anybody.
Misconstrued, yeah. Yes, yes.
Because
yes,
exactly. I absolutely appreciate it. I've not been through situations of sexual assault, so I don't ever dare to tell people or think how that would feel for somebody. That's horrible. I just think that I didn't get that from this segment, and I was able to just look at it from a purely story perspective and go, well, that part worked and that part didn't. You know, that right. was what it ended for me. So that's why I'm able to look at it in a different way.
And you know what, Kenny? The thing is, though, is we're comparing Breaking Bad, which was one of the most perfectly written dramas in television history, if not the most well-written drama in television history, to WWE, which is notoriously horrendous for storytelling.
Indeed, indeed. But I think that what we can agree on is that it was good that Rusev got some heat back in the end.
Yes,
you know, I thought
yes.
him dragging Enzo out of the room at the end was just fantastic.
Oh, it looks so good. Absolutely. And like I said, all of this could have been avoided, I think, at least what I consider to be a reasonable outrage. All of the reasonable outrage that I feel could have been avoided with just tweaking the story a little bit, tweaking the script, making him excited to go get laid as opposed to
wanting to
go through with it.
That was the one thing I was going to say is the other issue. You know, I brought up the some people on Twitter who, you know, have like counters for how long women are wrestling or whatever. I think those types of fans, and again, I don't mean it in an offensive way, I don't think they would be happy in that scenario either. You know,
no, of course they would. Of course they wouldn't.
I think they'd still be saying, "Well, wait a minute, you're still, you're still using a woman as a sexual object in that sense. And I get it, but for me, it's like, you know, it's not like we're having Playboy bunny fights anymore.
Exactly.
And the whole idea of this segment was actually to try and get Lana over as a heel. So, you know, I mean, if she was a baby face, but again, that goes into the problem because she has kind of been a baby face the last couple of weeks. So the story becomes so muddled. But I hope that us having this conversation is a good thing for people to listen to, because I kind of feel like, you know, we're kind of coming at, you know, I'm bringing in maybe sort of different opinions, and so is David. And I think that, but we're all kind of, we all have the same moral message, I guess, in the end of it.
No, absolutely. And this is the way that people should describe, should talk about this kind of stuff and relate to one another and understand that there is, you know, there's different aspects to this. It's good to get someone's outsider opinion of it. And, you know, since you didn't automatically make that connection, like me and my wife, we did immediately. And I know a lot of other people did. But I also know that there's tons of people out there who didn't make the connection. And I think that there is a big difference between having a femme fatale, which I like the femme fatales. Let me just say that automatically. If that makes me sexist, so be it. I'll wear that badge, whatever. But the rapey thing, et cetera, I thought it was a bit much. You clearly didn't, but one thing that we can agree is most of this could have been avoided if they would have just tweaked the script a little bit. And let me end on this note. If you've ever been sexually assaulted and you're having any issues with it, if it's something that affects your daily life, please make sure that you call RAIN. The number, they're open 24 hours a day, 1-800-656-4673. And you can make donations there at rain.org. It is a charity that Mick Foley often associates with. He donates a lot of money. I've donated money there before in the past. If you ever have any issues at all, if it's anything that you're struggling with, please call that number or go to their website.
Indeed. Up next, we had, I'm going to try and get back to where we were at this point. Oh my God. So
what a heavy
happened.
Subject. For a heavy subject for a shitty throwaway Monday Night Raw, in my opinion. Like, what the hell? This just came in out of nowhere.
I'll be honest, I enjoyed 90% of this Rusev.
The only thing
for me that didn't work was the Lana Enzo part of it. That was
Once it got to the hotel room, I wasn't into it as much. But then Rusev came out, and I was more into it again.
Exactly. So we then got Sami Zayn versus Kevin Owens in a non-title match. They went about 12 minutes. Kevin Owens got the win in the end. I wasn't crazy about how Zayn was performing all these moves, and Owens was just able to do a pop-up powerbomb out of nowhere and pin Zayn clean.
I love the finish, Kenny.
Oh, see, I've always had an issue, and I actually think this is maybe like a Kevin Owens thing, really. I don't like the idea that when you've had a lot of punishment, you can just jump up and do your finishing move in that way. I don't find it believable.
I think it's easier that he has a move that he can hit out of nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, but I feel like it takes too much effort to do when you've just gone through exploder suplexes and all that sort of stuff. Like, and you know, to his credit, he did kind of fall down on top of him as if like, oh, that's the last thing I could afford to do.
I will say this, even though he won the match, I thought that Sami Zayn looked way stronger. It looked like Sami Zayn could win at any moment and Kevin Owens was just dead. And Kevin Owens just happened to hit his move and just happened to fall down on top of him and just happened to win the match.
Yes. Yeah. I think Kevin Owens definitely needed the win. I would have preferred to see a little bit of a tweak in the finish, but it was fine. It was good. They always have good matches. And
they always have good matches. They will fight forever, they'll all be great.
Yes, and I assume the Sami and Braun Strowman thing will continue next week, so we'll see where that goes.
I'm sure.
We got Rich Swann against TJ Perkins in a non-title match. They went relatively short, but it was decent. The fans were pretty into it for a cruiserweight match. And then they're going to do the rematch with Kendrick and Rich Swann on 205 Live.
I thought that this was the best cruiserweight match on Monday Night Raw yet.
Yeah, it was decent. It was decent.
They actually told a little bit of a story. They had some fun. They were dabbing on each other, which the crowd ate up. The
thing is, they're also like two of my four favorite cruiserweights. So
right, No. They're both excellent guys, and they both have the two best entrances of the cruiserweights. So it was it was just a really fun match. Actually, there was a little bit of back and forth and some good maneuvers, and they showed more personality in this match than most cruiserweights have thus far. Maybe they're settling in. Maybe they're settling in, Kenny. Maybe the cruiserweights are finally getting some legs.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. I enjoyed this. I don't really have much to say about it, but I liked it. We had Bayley versus Alicia Fox, and it's funny, you know, we've got later on in the main event, we've got this great kind of women's rivalry, and then SmackDown's trying to do these stories, and Bayley's feud now is that she gave a toy bear to Cedric Alexander on the pre-show. And Alicia Fox fancies Cedric Alexander, so she's annoyed about it, so they have a match. And Michael Cole says, as they're coming out, that, I can't remember the exact verbiage, but something like, you know, there's a fierce rivalry here with Bayley and Alicia Fox. It was something absurd of this being like a real heated issue or something.
The teddy bear rivalry.
But Bailey's gonna get to sell some teddies, get to make some more money, so that's good. It's really worrying how little the crowd popped for Bayley.
Yeah, I thought so too. Though anytime that a little chubby kid gets a teddy bear or some sunglasses or anything like that, it always kind of warms my heart because I too was once the little chubby kid and I never got jack shit.
Yeah. That's...
Still better enough, David. Fair enough. Still Bayley, better, Kenny.
Well, you're always better though. Bayley won in two minutes or so. Then we got Emelina is debuting next week, so she'll be there. We got Mark Henry versus Titus O'Neil, the tussle in Texas that lasted 10 seconds. Which, to be fair, here's the thing. This was the best outcome that this scenario could have had.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Also, I did mean to say that earlier on, there was a really funny thing where, like, when Enzo had left to go to the hotel, he was on the phone and he was talking to an Uber driver, but they don't have Uber in Austin, Texas. So you could, if you go back and watch it, you can hear the live crowd all chatting, "There's no Uber. There's no Uber."
Why is there no Uber in Austin?
I don't know, and apparently it was in the script, and they didn't take it out.
Probably something with the taxi commission, if I had to take a guess.
So Chris Jericho was backstage talking to Roman Reigns, and Kevin Owens wants to try and help Jericho in the match, but Jericho told him to just, you know, leave him alone. He wants to do it on his own. They have the US title match. It goes pretty long. It's pretty good. Owens comes out and actually... basically, what is it he does to Reigns? Owens does something to Reigns, doesn't he? Super kicks him.
Yeah.
And then Jericho goes to the code breaker, and then he goes to cover him. Roman kicks out. Owens comes on the apron. Jericho scolds him. Jericho tells him to go away. Owens goes away. Reigns spears him. Reigns retains. The story continues. I'm really loving this Jericho and Owens story.
Yeah, no, it's really good, but man, oh man, they should have swapped the title here. They really should have swapped the title here. It drives me absolutely batty that Roman Reigns has the U.S. title. I often forget that he even has it.
I don't like rivalries where it's like both guys have a belt.
Yeah, it seems like a waste on the card, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing, too. Jericho with the U.S. title would be incredible, right? And he's never held that title, has he?
No, I don't think he has.
Yeah, and so it would have just been absolutely perfect. He deserves the title for the run that he's had. And I thought that it would have been great. You could have told the story to where Kevin Owens cheats, gets him the title. Jericho could still be pissed that he cheated and got the title and he didn't do it on his own. And it could have still furthered the story. Either way, this match was fantastic. I thought that it was the best match that either guy has had in a while. They had me for the false finishes, hook, line, and sinker. I was absolutely certain that Jericho was going to get that title after the Codebreaker.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the match. I don't really want to see Jericho as the US champion, if I'm honest, but I would rather, I don't want to see it on Roman Reigns. I don't like, you know, Roman Reigns, the US champion, goes into Roadblock against Kevin Owens, who's the Universal champion. Like, it's too much for me. I like one belt where both guys are fighting over the belt. You know, like, show me somewhere where somebody was able to take two singles belts and really make it mean something.
It's just a really bad situation. My wife finally came to the conclusion yesterday whenever watching Raw, she hates Roman Reigns. Like, it finally hit her, like, hook, line, and sinker. She's like, you know, I always liked him, and he always has good performances in the ring and everything, and I thought the crowd was a little too harsh on him, but they've just shoved him down my throat to the point where I no longer like him at all. And I'm just completely soured on him. So, congratulations, WWE. You officially turned an open-minded person against Roman Reigns, let alone all the people actively seeking reasons to hate him.
Yep. I when I was talking to Matt Hardy on stage about this, we talked about Roman Reigns, and I think the thing he was saying was, I said if he went into the Lake of Reincarnation, and Matt said, well, I don't know who he would come out as. He would probably come out as John Cena.
Ah!
Anyway,
true story. I hurt Matt Hardy's feelings one time. I'm going to tell this story, you guys.
Okay.
I feel really bad about this story because I...
Were you the one chatting Fat Hardy at him?
No, I did something a little worse, you guys. Did something a little worse. And to this day, I kind of regret it because the way he looked at me, I could tell that he like actually got his feelings hurt by it. And it made me feel bad. And I ever since then, I've kind of regretted it. It was during his excellent heel run in Ring of Honor, right? And he had gained a bit of weight, right? And do you guys have Taco Bell in the UK?
No.
Okay.
Well, it's a taco place.
Okay, all right. Well, at Taco Bell, there's this dessert item. And they take these noodles and they deep fry them. And they cover them in cinnamon. And they're called cinnamon twists, right? I brought a sign that said Cinnamon Twist of Fate to Ring of Honor. And I held it up whenever he came out. I was sitting front row. He looked directly at it. And I was expecting, because I did it in solidarity with him. I thought he was an excellent heel, and I was trying to give him a bit of heat, right? Playing the casual fan. He looked directly at the Cinnamon Twist of Fate sign. And just frowned and just looked at me like, you disappointed me so much. And then turned around and continually looked over at me and gave me glances that he looked so sad. And I don't know if he was playing me or not, but if so, I was squeaking like a fiddle. Because I have never felt good about myself since that day. A part of me died whenever I made fun of Matt Hardy's weight gain.
Aw, poor Matt. you're a dick, David. So we then got I feel bad for these guys because we got to this point in the show, but it's like it's right before the main event, and you're like, this show's too long.
Yes.
Then Sheamus and Cesaro against the club again, and for the number one contendership, it ended up big schmoz. So now it's gonna be a triple threat match next week. Anything to add on that one?
It's gonna be next week's gonna be the last title defense before they have the record, right?
Yes, if they keep the belts, David. Ooh,
I am going to go Entry. Ahead. I'm going to go ahead and lay down a shocking prediction. I think Sheamus and Cesaro take the titles from him before they get the record.
I hope they do. It's more interesting.
I hope they don't, but I hope they do shortly thereafter because Sheamus and Cesaro are really good and they've won me
can
over
I,
now.
Can I give you my explanation why I don't? Why I would prefer to not see them break the record?
Well, you like Demolition.
No, it's not. It's got nothing to do with that. I feel like I'm going to lose a lot of followers here with this. I don't think the New Day deserve it.
Ooh.
I don't think they're a great act. I think they're funny. They're very funny, but the fact that they've had those belts for over a year and they've not had one great feud.
How is that their fault, though?
It's not their fault, but I just think if you're going to do that, you do it with an act who's hot. You do it with, like, a... Who was the person? Somebody... When CM Punk was doing his 434-day reign, that's remember, because it was CM Punk, and he did all this great shit, and he had, you know, he had all the feuds with John Cena, and the feuds with the stuff with The Rock, and he did the stuff with Ryback, and, like, there was so much good stuff that he did.
Then the WWE should have created better tag teams for the New Day to fight. It's not the New Day's responsibility to create tag teams to fight.
But then in that sense, I can't just say, oh, well, they do deserve it because, in spite of bad writing, I don't think the act is hot enough. I think that the act has been, I know you love them and I do like them, but the New Day for me for a while now, like they're baby faces, but they cheat a lot. They act like heels in a lot of ways. I mean, the thing is, they're going to do it whether we like it or not, but, and I don't know if there's going to be anybody else that comes along that could break that reign, but I just don't really think that it's... I think if they do it, they're doing it more to say they broke the reign than actually saying, well, these guys are so great as a tag. You know, like, I don't think in 20 years people are going to be saying, you know, the Heart Foundation, Legion of Doom, the New Age Outlaws, and the New Day. I don't think that's going to be a sentence that people are going to say. I could be wrong,
then,
but for me...
If that's the case, then you can't say that about any act currently on the roster.
Charlotte would deserve to have a reign like that because she, as a character, she knocks it out of the park all the time. The material's great that's there.
I would say that Charlotte is not as hot as a heel as the New Day was at their peak as a babyface tag team.
That's true, but I think that Charlotte has performed now longer better than the New Day have. Not performed better.
Because Charlotte is facing people like Bayley and Sasha Banks.
Yeah, this is not me personally attacking the New Day as performers. It's me saying that they've not been in any story that has captured me. Whenever they
not
work with,
their fault.
But does that mean that I'm supposed to just say I think they should get the belts because they're there?
I think that you are diminishing the return on how hot of a tag team they've actually been.
For me, this is just my personal opinion, but I just think that they hurt tag teams when they work with them in a lot of ways. You know, the club are not as good as
the New Day
with.
Didn't hurt the club. The right killed the club.
But you can't feud with the New Day. Like the New Day as an act, you can't feud with them because they don't react. The only time that they got for me personally, the only time that they got really interesting as an act, after the kind of, because they are really funny, you know, for in their segments for the most part, but when they did the Wyatt thing, and Xavier had that moment where he almost was, you know, maybe going to be taken over by the Wyatts,
and then Creative was, put the kibosh on that.
Exactly, but just like I say, for I think it's more, you know, I'm just done with the New Day. Really, I'm just not there anymore. It's just not for me. I think
you have never been more wrong about anything in the... How many years have we been... Well, let's see. It's been four years.
Given that it's an opinion, you can't be wrong about an opinion.
You have never been more wrong about anything in the history of Inside the Ropes than you are about this, Kenny.
Disagree.
Let us know how you feel, ladies and gentlemen.
The thing is... I would be interested in what people think, because I've heard a lot of people say that the New Day are not as entertaining as they used to be, and that's not necessarily by the writing. But well, if a TV show goes bad, you know, like, you know, it's like if you watch Dexter, and Dexter fell off a cliff for the last couple of seasons, but you don't just say that Dexter was still a good show because you liked Michael Anthony Hall, whatever his name was. Like, it's one of those things. So I would love nothing more than the New Day to be in a program soon where I can come on this podcast and say, you know what, David, I think you were completely right and I was wrong. But, you know, the last time that I really enjoyed the New Day on a week-to-week basis was about 6 months ago, and it's just not been there for me for a long time. I know that some people do still enjoy them, yourself included, and that's totally cool. But you know, I don't think the act for me right now is hot enough for this. Like, for me, the story of them right now is getting this title reign. And I don't think that there's any real story with them apart from that at the moment.
Shouldn't that be the story, though? I mean, it is historic. Like, for instance, whenever Mark McGwire broke the home run record in baseball, everybody was talking about that. They weren't talking about how shitty the team he was on was at the time. They were talking about him making history. Records are meant to be broken, and that should be the focal point of a story.
Yeah, but I think, you know, I don't know anything about Mark McGwire, so me trying to have this conversation about him is probably going to go tits up, but I think wrestling is different in the sense of, like, how hot an act is in terms of the stories they have. And there is a big element to the fact that WWE aren't telling a lot of great stories for the most part. You know, that is a problem. We've talked about this for weeks, right? Months. But I just, for me, every week, every month, I wane more and more on them. And I don't really, I'm just not, it's not that I dislike them or that I'm like annoyed at them. I just am not that interested anymore.
Over the past year, Kenny, how many acts would you say have been hotter than the New Day?
In terms of baby faces or heels or both?
Either.
I think The Miz is hotter. The Miz got Dolph Ziggler over. Like, The Miz managed to get Dolph Ziggler to be relevant again. He has main evented shows. The IC title match stole the show at No Mercy. And I think he's definitely been a hotter act this year. Who else has been a hotter act?
But, judging by your same logic, The Miz was pure shit until 3 months ago. So 9 months out of the year, he was garbage.
But your question was, has anybody else been hotter at any point this year? And The Miz...
The course of this year.
The Miz has been hot for the last 6 months for me, since he got to SmackDown in July, and he started his whole feud with Daniel Bryan. So it's been since he went to SmackDown that I think that's been there. I think Chris Jericho, since he turned heel, has been consistently... But here's the problem, again, and this is the negative on the WWE's portrayal of stars sometimes, is it's so much easier to be a hot act as a heel as to be a hot act as a babyface. That's the problem, you know, because when you're a babyface, it's like you either do the Seth Rollins thing where you're kind of turned and you're still partly heel, or you do the Dean Ambrose thing where you're really zany. They don't present babyfaces. It's like 2 weeks ago, what was the match that Nudie had and Xavier cheated and they kept the belts?
That was against Cesaro and Sheamus 2 weeks ago.
Right, okay, yeah, so that one. So, like, in that match, Sheamus and Cesaro are kind of the baby faces, but so are the New Day, and then the New Day do the heel thing to win. And that's problematic for the New Day as an act, because...
I loved it. Me and my wife were sitting there, and we go, thank God, because a strict baby face three-man tag team is pointless. It gives them some bite. Why have a third man out there if he's not going to cheat?
I think if we live in a situation where the baby faces are the ones that cheat and the heels don't, then it's a problematic way to present wrestling.
At the same time, Hulk Hogan always hit people with steel chairs in the 80s. Eddie Guerrero lied, cheat, and stole. Piper came out in half blackface.
That's true, but when those things happened, the product was really, really hot for the most part. So you can get away with more stuff like that. It's like Jim Cornette says that line. A donkey could have shat in the ring in the Attitude Era, and people would have probably still been like, oh, that donkey shat in the ring, it was really good.
But the thing is, people cheered Eddie Guerrero because they loved Eddie Guerrero, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even if he cheated, people are going to cheer the New Day, even if they cheat, because they love the New Day.
That's fair. Listen, I feel like you're getting annoyed at me for not liking the New Day, but
It's not that I'm getting annoyed at you for not liking the New Day. That's perfectly fine. But to undermine their success.
I'm not undermining their success. To me,
it feels like you're doing too much. What have you done for me lately? As opposed to looking at the title reign as a whole. Because you're mentioning The Miz and how he's been on fire and everything. over the past year, but you're overlooking those 9 months where he was doing absolutely nothing. But you're looking at what he's done for you lately.
But then the comparison that you asked me to do, right? What I was saying is, how many days have they held the belts now? So 400 and something.
400 and yeah, it's close.
Okay, my point is, and again, I like the New Day in theory, and I liked them a lot more in the past. I don't think they've had one good feud as the tag team champions. That's my issue with it.
Which is a valid complaint. But again, I don't see why that's their fault.
But I'm not saying it's their fault. But I'm saying if you're going to be on television telling me that they're going to be the most historic tag team by getting the longest reign, I would like that to be with a team who have had just one feud that we can all look back and go, oh, that was really good, you know? And that's my problem with that. The thing with The Miz is not on SmackDown trying to say, I'm now going to be the longest reigning Intercontinental Champion of all time. So it's not like that's a comparison that we can really go into too much, because
that is literally his gimmick right now, though. He has notches on every part of his belt for every day that he's going to hold the title. So that's kind of...
No, but the point
is literally his gimmick at the moment.
No, I don't think so. The point
is the never-ending Miz Intercontinental Title reign reunion.
Yeah, that's his heel shtick. But he's not standing there going, the longest reigning Intercontinental Champion of all time was, you know, it was Curt Hennig. He's not going out saying Curt Hennig was the longest reigning Intercontinental Champion of all time at 502 days, and I'm going to be 503, and we're a week before it, and he's not had any good feuds. You know, that's not. If there's nobody that we can compare the New Day to right now in terms of having that long reign and being about to break a record. The CM Punk one is a comparison, but it's, you know, also he was a singles guy, so maybe it's not as fair to make that comparison.
CM Punk counted down every day that he held that title, though, just as The Miz would.
Yeah, and that's fine, but what I'm saying is the New Day are about to legitimately become the longest reigning tag team champions of all time, and there's not been one feud in that tag title reign that's been really good, and that's my problem. That's nothing against the New Day. You can aim it at the creative writers, you can aim it at whoever you want. That's my opinion, and I think that that's a shame that that's the case, because I think that the fans and the tag team division and the New Day, like, everybody deserves more from that. But you know what, like, to give them their credit, I mean, if you don't think I'm giving them the credit, I was a big proponent of them for a long time. I still think that they have potential to be more interesting. I would maybe like to see a heel turn from them at some point.
I think the New Day overcame the biggest hole that anyone has ever dug for anyone to become one of the greatest tag teams of all time.
I see, that's where I would disagree.
They were put in a racist black choir gimmick.
Yeah, no, they absolutely were. I wouldn't put them in the context of one of the greatest tag teams of all time.
Imagine Titus O'Neil becoming one of the greatest champions of all time with his current gimmick.
Why is that the comparison? Why is it him or Titus O'Neil?
Because it's equally terrible in terms of gimmick.
Well,
ideas.
Listen, as we've gone on about this subject for a long time, I don't think we're ever going to really agree on it. But we've had a discussion. Hopefully you guys have enjoyed us going back and forth. Let us know what you think. The New Day... working for you as an act, do you think they're one of the greatest tag teams of all time in WWE? Do you want to see them break the record? Let us know on Twitter, and we can banter more about it over there. But let's talk about the main event segment. We had Charlotte come out to publicly apologize to Ric Flair. She brings him out. He's there. They hug, and then she slaps him in the face and berates him until Sasha comes out to try and make the save, but then Charlotte just destroys Sasha and then drags her back into the ring and lies her down and says to Ric Flair, there's your trophy. What did you think of this main event segment?
Charlotte's just the best. She's just so good right now, right? Like, she is the best heel on either show. She is maybe the best heel in all of wrestling. She's just absolutely on fire. I was so happy to see her beat the shit out of her terrible dad. I am not a Ric Flair fan by any stretch of the means. I think that he is just a old piece of shit who treats people terribly. So to see her treating him terribly, oh man. I loved every second of it. Sasha needed to have her ass handed to her. I thought that this was just an excellent segment from front to back. The crowd was stupid. A lot of people were bitching to me about the crowd. I agree, they were really bad. It didn't matter, though, because Charlotte is that good. God, she's just one of the best promos in the WWE. And she is by far the best magnet for heat in the entire company. I love her to death. I hope that she gets the title back. I hope she keeps the title for as long as the New Day has, because I love her.
I hope she keeps it longer. Go for it. Keep the belt, love. You're doing great.
Here's the thing. It's not hyperbole whenever she says she's the queen.
No, it's not. That's the key with her, is like the reason why. And also, this is the thing. Charlotte is one of the only people who actually tries to be a villain. You know, actively yes. tries to be. She doesn't want to be liked. You know, she doesn't want to be cheered by anyone.
Her I thought and Rusev are the only two.
Well, I don't know. Rusev's pretty much Rocky Balboa at the moment, sadly. I think that the use of Ric Flair here was really, really good. You know, I thought that he was one of the most impressive things about Charlotte is that I thought their act together was excellent, Ric and Charlotte. And I think that the fact that she was able to not have him, because like if your dad's Ric Flair, right, one of the biggest stars of all time, it's going to be really easy for him to overshadow you. And even if he's not trying to, it's going to be really hard for that to not happen because he's such a big name.
Yeah.
But she was so good that she got it to a point where people weren't looking at Ric Flair anymore. You know, people were looking at Charlotte, and that's a testament to her. I think that when they cut him in May, I was kind of concerned a little bit in my head about where she would go from there. But she's actually done better than I think anybody could have ever hoped she would. She's knocked out of the park all the time. I thought the use of bringing him back here to do this was a really good emotional roller coaster for everyone, because like I didn't know what happened in this segment when I was watching it, because I hadn't really read the spoilers for it. And when she slapped him, I was like, oh no, you didn't just slap it. And like, so I bought into it, you know.
She slapped him really hard too. It was great.
Yeah, and that's like Sondra had said it, I think, on the SmackDown Summary last week. Like when you can get so invested in a moment in wrestling, that's like one of the best things about it. And she hooked me here, and then you know she just destroyed Sasha. And that line at the end, "Here's your trophy to Flair." Oh my god, it was excellent. Such a great segment. I'm really looking forward to their Iron Woman match.
I wish it were an hour instead of half hour, but I am a stickler.
You are a stickler. But I think they're going to knock it out of the park. I'm very intrigued because I can't call it. I feel like Charlotte's going to retain it. No, I feel like Charlotte's going to get it back.
Yeah.
Because I don't feel like they're going to give up this whole Charlotte loses on pay-per-view thing again very, very soon.
If I were them, in all honesty, I would have Charlotte lose sooner rather than later on pay-per-view, because I feel like that is a streak that's kind of really tough to beat, right? Because otherwise she's going to continually drop the title on every Monday Night Raw, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I think the latest they should hold it off to is WrestleMania, if that's what they want to do. But like, no later than that. You know, that would be the kind of...
What I would actually propose is that she lose on like a paper. I think that she is getting the title back at this one, but I would have her lose at like the February pay-per-view or something like that, but then have a streak for the rest of her career where she successfully wins at every one of the four big pay-per-views.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting proposal. I think the thing with Charlotte is that's kind of, I think that she is the better character of her and Sasha, which yes. I think is why that she's probably the better one to have the belt. But then at the same time, you know, she came out here and knocked it out of the park. And I think that no matter, you know, David and I can debate the New Day to the end of time, or we can talk about whatever, but, you know, we're both very passionate about championships in wrestling and how they matter and how they feel. And I think Charlotte has done a lot to help the women's championship to be propelled to what it is.
The women's championship started with nothing, quite literally. It was just conceived. It was just birthed. And she has single-handedly made that title very prestigious.
Mm-hmm. So that's kind of Raw this week. I'm going to give this one 7.5 out of 10. I enjoyed... I enjoyed the majority of the stuff on the show. I think the thing that's not concerning me about Raw, but I feel like the entire extra hour is taken up of like 2 minute matches.
Yeah.
With like, you know, Bayley and Alicia Fox, Mark Henry and Titus O'Neil, Jack Gallagher and Aria Davari. And I'm kind of like, I would just rather that hour was taken off. And then I would probably be like, 10 out of 10. But, well, no, it wouldn't be 10 out of 10. It'd be like 9. But like, I thought there was enough stuff in this show to be enjoyable. I really love where the Owens and Jericho stuff's going. It's a slow build. It's really enjoyable. I actually hope they kind of get back together again before they break up.
No. They got to.
That's where the money is, hopefully. I thought that in spite of the questionable direction of Lana and Enzo, I thought that Rusev getting his heat back and getting to drag Enzo out of a hotel room was great. I really enjoyed the Kevin Owens Sami Zayn match. Roman and Jericho was good. Charlotte knocked it out of the park in the main event segment. So there was enough on the show for me. There wasn't really anything that was offensive or horrible. You know, even Mark Henry and Titus O'Neil, which, as you were mentioning last week, Titus O'Neil is like my... That or the Golden Truth, just kill me now. I can't take it. I cannot do it. It just, it's so dire. But what did you think of this, Rod, David? What did you think of this one?
I thought that it was, it dragged on. Is it just me, Kenny, or did this one drag on like a lot? I found myself looking at the clock like
did you watch more
than I usually do.
Did you watch live or on DVR?
I watched it on DVR.
Okay. Yeah. So I watched obviously like today. I think that what happens with Raw sometimes is like the first 40 minutes are really easy. And then there's like 20 minutes of like lag, and then there's another 40 minutes of really easy, and then there's like half an hour of lag, and then there's the main event bit. So it's always this weird thing where you kind of go and like, it's almost like you've had a can of Coca-Cola and you're getting the sugar rush, and it goes down, it goes up, and it goes down, it goes up.
You know what I think it is, actually? The opening segment didn't really do much for me this week, and it usually does. And I think that that's a lot, I don't know, I think that is the lubricant to lube up my sexual hole, you decide which one, and allows for the WWE wiener to go in smoother.
Yes, it's, I mean, you are the king of the analogy, David.
Yes.
The horrible, horrible analogy.
As for this one, no lube.
I'm
going to be walking rather wonky for the next
what do
few
you
days.
Get, what do you get this non-lubed version of Raw?
I give this a 6.5 because the matches were really good, I thought, for the most part. The Jericho and Roman Reigns match, fantastic. Owens and Zayn, fantastic. I thought that TJ Perkins and Rich Swann was excellent. I thought that it was a excellent introduction to Jack Gallagher, one of my all-time favorites. The in-ring stuff was pretty good this week, and I thought the segments outside of the main event were kind of lacking a bit. But I'm just happy that we got to see more backstage vignettes, even if they didn't hit the mark as much as they wanted to on it.
There you go. So it has been quite the episode of the Raw Rundown today. I don't think I was very mentally prepared for where this episode was going to go. I was on a jury for the New Day, which I didn't expect to be. I was two steps off being branded a person purporting rape or something. Like, it escalated a lot, but I think that we've managed to get through all the murky waters of the show. I think that the discussion about Rusev and Enzo and Cass and Lana was a discussion that more people should be having.
Absolutely. It is our duty to have discussions like that, because as lighthearted and fun as we can get, we are also very sophisticated folks here at Inside the Ropes. And it is a discussion that only sophisticated folks are capable of having.
Indeed. So you will hear from Sandra and I on TLC tomorrow on Patreon, patreon.com/insidetheropes. You can get us on tomorrow. It'll be tomorrow with the SmackDown summary. The Retro Raw Rundown will be on Friday. Twitter, @inside_theropes. David, where are you on Twitter?
You can yell at me and make penis analogies at Zoopsul. That's ZOOPSOUL. Kenny, despite gallivanting with Matt Hardy, I do still think you're great.
Aw, thanks, mate. You can get me at KennyMC1985. You can get Matt Hardy at Matt Hardy Brand. Go follow him, people. And that's it. I am mentally and physically droned out. And do you know what? Like, just want to say this very quickly. I loved that New Day discussion we got to have there, because here's the thing. When you're a wrestling fan and you come up with an opinion, you should be challenged to back it up.
Yes, absolutely.
If you're going to have... If you and because I can tell you this, David will walk away from this going, okay, I don't agree with Kenny, but I respect what he's saying because I back it up. I back up what I'm saying, and he's able to say to me stuff like, you know, well, you know, point out a flaw in the logic, and we can go at it, because sometimes, like in discussions, you can't do that with wrestling fans, and I think it's one of the sad things, because you should be able to, you know, you should be able to really have those debates and go at it. So
I think the reason that people can't have heated debates about wrestling is the fact that they use wrestling to get away from heated debates elsewhere in life. As to where me and you, we have nothing else going on that matters. Like, this is all that matters to us. Our entire life is just wasted on professional wrestling, ladies and gentlemen.
And I'm going to leave you with this, guys, because I think this is the best story to finish on. And Matt told me this off stage, and then he told it on stage. So Matt Hardy was at his home in Cameron, North Carolina, about 3 months ago. 4 months ago, I think it was August. And he got a phone call from the US federal government.
Oh!
And they said, hi, is this Matthew Hardy? And they were like, yeah, it's me. And he was like, I'm just calling about your run. Have you got all your paperwork ready? And he's like, what? He said, you're running for president of the United States. And Matt was like, no, I'm not. And he was like, we've received so many votes for you that you are eligible to run.
Oh my God.
Or he was eligible to like apply to run. Like, he'd got to a level where there'd been so many people had sent in to the federal government that they wanted broken Matt Hardy to be the president of the United States.
Oh, good Lord.
Wrestling, folks. And you know what? I'd still prefer him over Trump.
So. Yeah, I was going to say, all those people wrote in Matt Hardy and now we have Trump as president. Oh, God. Good Lord. But you know what? You know what? If I could describe that story in one word, you know what I would use?
What's that?
Wonderful!
Thank you, David. It's been delightful.
As always.
We'll be back next week with episode 21. Our Raw Rundown can finally have an alcoholic beverage. Goodbye!
It's a new day. Yes, it is! Stop till you reach the top, and while them haters keep hating, you'll be winning a race.